Hey, welcome back to Section. My name is Siddharth, I go by Sid, and today I will be walking you through Project 2. Much like for the first project where I tried to break down the most important parts of the project and tried to walk you through them, I'm going to do the same for this week's, but the thing about this week's section is going to be that I'm just going to try to make sure you get the concepts right. Because much of the code that I will be talking about today is either in lecture or will be shown in section tonight. So tonight's going to be mostly about understanding how the different pages of the site of Project 2 are going to work together, and what is the process you're trying to what is the process that the user has to go through on your website. Let me first pull up. So once again, we need a separate subdomain for the CS75 finance project. So go onto the panel. Subdomain management, and just like the first time, the one we created last time is still here. Let's just hit project2.ohiworld, which is my domain, and then bang, there it is. And now if I go on project2.ohiworld, this is probably not ready yet, but after a while you will have a subdomain much like sections.ohiworld.com. This is exactly what we did last time, and this is where your code will live, and this is where you will execute the submit command at the end of the project. I'm going to break that up, and let's talk about the database scheme, because for the first project, the most challenging part of the first project was designing your XML schema to figure out how your menu is going to be represented in XML. Like I showed last week in section, XML and SQL are basically similar ideas, right? They're trying to do the same thing. There we open an XML file, here we connect to a database. There we look for the children, here we run a query. So they're very similar in nature, and I just want to talk about the schema of your database just like we did for XML. So your user has to be able to log in, so register, buy stocks, sell stocks, look up quotes, log out. Pretty much it, right? And you obviously have to display what the number of stocks he has and how much money he has left. I want you guys to walk me through this this time. So if you were going to design a, let's work with two tables. I'm going to tell you that we're going to do all of this with two tables. Does anybody want to start off with the first one? First one's obviously the user's one, right? For the registration. What are the fields you will have? So this is the first table. So it's the user ID. What is the user ID here? Primary key. So here it is a number. That is correct. So I'm going to draw a little key. It actually looks not bad. A primary key, which means it is unique. So every user in your users table will have one and only one primary key. And the primary key will not be repeated for any other user. What are the other things you want to store here? Right, username, password. How do you want to do? So, it is okay to store the password just like it is, right? So, if my password is foobar, it is fine to go ahead and just store it as foobar. But it's not so secure because, after all, you're storing a password just like it is. Even when you type a password onto a form, you're covering it with asterisks, right? So here we take a look at the function called AES. Encrypt, which is available both in your MySQL database as well as PHP, so that you can take this password and encrypt it in some way and store it in your database. So let's just talk about that for a second. So let's say I have some password foo, right? And this gives me some ciphertext. Ciphertext is the equivalent of this, and after I encrypt it, say it gives me XZ1. Exclamation, right? I'm just making this up right here. So let's say your user enters his username and password. So how will you go about looking for that in your table? So you have in your table, you're storing the encrypted passwords. And the user is just going to enter his password, right? So you want to check to see if it matches. What do you have to do? Yep, so encrypt it first and then. And then you don't want to decrypt it. You can't decrypt it. So you want to encrypt it and then match it with the table. That we are going to know. So if this password was foo, unless this password is foo, these are not going to be the same. So you, for any password that is entered, you encrypt it and look for it in the table. Coming back here, I'm going to rub this out because we need more space. What else do you want to store here?
Cash.
I'm sorry?
Cash.
Yeah. Cash. Great. Outside this, you might or might not want to store what I'm going to call metadata, which is the person's name, his email address, whatever you want to store, his address, his phone number, up to you. So you're going to have these five fields for users, right? Now, what are the pages that will involve using the users table? So what all are you going to use the users table for? I'm sorry? Login, obviously. So the first one is login, where you will, once you receive a username and password, you encrypt the password and look for it in this table and check to see if it matches. If it matches, how do you authorize someone? David's gone over several examples here. So you need a flag to tell you that the user is logged in, right? They got the password right, so you don't want them to like have to sign in every time it goes to the login page. So what would you store? Yep, session. Session's a server-side memory space, so you don't have to worry about session. And you can use it however you want. You can say session authorization equals the user ID, right? This way, if this is not set, you know that the user is not logged in. So this means that when the user logs out, what do you want to do? You want to unset this value. So if this value is set, you know the user is logged in. And what does this store? His user ID. Using the user ID, you can pull up his username. You don't need his username and password, because the only reason you're going to use these is to initially validate his login. But once that's been done, to look up his cash, for instance, all you need is the user ID. What are the other things that we might use this table for? The most important is the cash, right? So we're going to use the cash part of the table for any transaction, be it buy or sell, pretty much buy or sell. So let's just write out buy or sell. We'll come back to how these are going to work. Buy and sell. So put it out there so that you remember small checks like these. When I want to buy five stocks of Google, so stock ticker GOOG, what do you want to use this table for first? You first want to make sure I have five times the amount of the cost of one stock. And then once, if I do have that money, you want to update the table and reduce the amount from there. So you're going to use this to check to make sure I have money to buy it and to actually reduce the amount after I buy it. Any questions at this point? Well, not really.
For all the tables, are we expected to create them dynamically?
Create them dynamically, as in. So you create the table with PHP MyAdmin or by like manually executing a SQL query, right? So when you go on, so the question was, how do you create these dynamically? So I'm going to go up to PHP MyAdmin here.
Do we have to write the SQL?
Well, no, you don't have to write SQL code, because you want the table to exist regardless of whether you're running code or not, correct?
Right, but I want it the first time.
The first time you basically go up and, like I did for buses last time, you create the table right here using, if you create a new database.
You're saying we just manually create
it. Right, you manually create it, which makes sense, because we don't have to change the fields of the table, right?
Right.
We're not going to change the fields of the table. And if we do, we can come back and manually change it. It's going to be once in so long that it doesn't matter. Yeah?
Is there an easy way to duplicate the tables we create in our own environment?
Yeah. So the question was, is there a way to duplicate the tables you create in your local host?
Without
having to actually enter the, yes, there is. If you go on PHP MyAdmin, you will see this part called export. So you hit this, you select whichever database you want, you choose how you want to do it, and then once you have the file, you can upload it onto your cloud, and then say import, and then choose the file from your computer, and the table will be created. Yep. Any other questions?
So you can just use the table that you have in Excel in Border there.
Well, can you use the table you have in Excel? Not necessarily, because when you're developing on your local host, you're going to use it for transactions, right? You can't write PHP commands to change values in an Excel table. I'm sure it's possible. You can obviously work with a CSV file, but we're working with SQL, so you're going to use a SQL table, and you want to export it as a CSV, and then back to SQL using the import command. Questions? Great. So the other, I'm going to go down that way. So the other, if you can't see it, I'm going to see. Yeah, I'm just going to write it out. So I'm going to leave it on the board. So if you can't see, do come on over later and then copy it down. The other table we want to store is all the transactions. So I'm going to call this transactions. So what are the fields that I'm going to store here? What are the values that I'm going to store here? The user ID. What is the user ID here? Why do I need it? Because I want to associate every transaction with some user who is logged in, presumably, and buys or sells something. I want to store the user ID. What else do I want to sell? What else do I want to store? I'm sorry?
The date.
Yeah, I mean, there's no harm in storing the date. Although I don't think you will. I don't think the specs need you to use it anywhere. The stock symbol, right? So let's just call it all the metadata. Anything extra you want to store, right? Because it's like we did there. You can store their address if you want to. You can store the date if you want to. That's completely fine. So the symbol, and what else do you need to store? The number of chairs, right? And the price. So you don't want to not store the price, because, and you don't want to look up the price when he's selling it, because that undermines the idea of stock transactions themselves. So when the user buys a stock, you want to look up the price and store that price in here. You want to associate the user ID, where is the user ID stored, in the session variable. You want the metadata, whatever information you want to store about that transaction. There's one thing we're missing here. Yeah, exactly. Are we buying or selling? That's type of transaction. So what is the easiest way to do this? A flag, right? I'm just going to call this isSold, right? I'm going to set this to 1 if it's sold. I'm going to set it to 0 if it's buy. As long as you keep that consistent throughout your PHP, you will know for any given transaction whether you bought it or sold it. This is your basic database schema. Do you have questions on this? There's actually a data type called bool in your SQL. You basically need a flag, right? You need to know if it's either going to be a selling transaction or something buying. So.
And that would be better than saying either buy or sell.
Right. I mean, it's completely fine. You just need some flag there that lets you know whether the user bought it or sold it. That how you want to implement it is completely up to you. Yep.
I have two questions. Why do we need to input the price as long as we decrease from their cash amount the current price when they bought it, and then when they sell it, they'll get the current price at the time they sold it? Like, when would we ever call back that?
Right. Price? Okay. So I see what you're saying. So you don't need the price. For the previous semester, you had to like display the history of all the transactions. And then you did need the price, but you make a good point. You don't really need the price here. Any other questions?
So then you need the
useful. You do. No, you don't. You don't need it. You don't need it. Wow, that makes the table a lot simpler. So I guess you just. Yep. Well, I take it back. You do need both the price. You need the quantity. You need the sold. Yeah, you need the sold or bought. Because if you're displaying the portfolio, you want to know how many shares, whether you own 5 shares or sell 5 shares.
So I thought the project specs were only about what you own, not the actual transaction.
Right, but what you own. If I'm going to have 5,
yeah.
I guess you will just unset it from your. You'll delete it from your table at the end of when you sell. Yeah, that works. That works. That works. So that way, when you display your portfolio, you're just going to go to every row in this table and display every single record, because those are the only ones that are going to exist, right?
Well, you select off shares for a particular user.
Right.
And you select off his portfolio.
Right.
Considered selecting everything with his.
Right. Exactly. So right. Exactly. So if you want to display the portfolio, you have the user ID because the user is logged in. So you basically query for select star with user ID equals whatever the person's user ID is, and that is going to be your portfolio. Any questions? Thanks for clearing that up. I didn't think of that. Any other questions?
For historical, for profile, for portfolio, we don't need to show the login.
No, you don't have to. You don't need to display a history of transactions for the portfolio.
Just
how much what they own at that moment.
Okay.
Oh, so you want to display a portfolio. So the question was, if you don't want to display the transactions, why do you need it in the first place? You want to display the portfolio of every user, right?
Right.
So if I want to display that I have five shares of Google, whatever, right? If I have a list of 7 stocks and you want to display all of them in your portfolio, unless you store it in here, you're not going to be able to get that information. Do you see why you need it?
Oh, so this is not really a transaction table.
This is more of a portfolio table. Right. This, yes. Right. You don't need buy sell. Yeah. I'm sorry about the confusion. Great. So authorization. We've gone over that. So you basically take for any. Yeah. Don't want to make up its mind. There we go. So for authorization, every time the user logs in, you want to check, you want to query to see. You can do something like select one, which I believe David did a couple of lectures ago. You want to just check to see if there's one record here that will. You want it to return one if there's a record with username and password as has been supplied by the user. And if that's one, you basically want to say, oh, he's authorized, and set that. And then every time you want to look up his portfolio, for instance, you will take the user ID from the session variable and display all the contents of that portfolio. Let's do the stock lookup because I think this is the only new, this is the only part of the project that we've not taken a look at all. So I have a few examples here. So let me just let's take a look at the source. Oh, excellent. Let me quickly. So. How many of you have seen the function called fgetcsv on the php.net menu? Okay, great. So what does it do? It, just like file get contents, gives you all the contents of a file. fgetcsv gives you all the contents of a CSV file in the form of an array. And let's see. Sections, week 6. CD of get schmon star okay, so let's take a look at this file. So I set up a handle. This is virtually a rewrite of the examples on the php.net menu, on the php.net manual, which is a great resource for fgetcsv and the examples to use these. So I set up a handle, which is just a variable that opens a file named students.csv under the read mode. So you can have a read mode, a write mode, and read and write mode. That is what the R signifies here. And it says while data equals data is a new variable, while data equals fgetcsv handle, some set of parameters here not equal to false, I'm going to variable dump data. Let's take a look at students.csv and then come back here so that we have. So. It's just a list of comma separated values, CSV, that's what it stands for, comma separated values, a name and age, school you go to and what you're studying. And here, so when I open this, it gives me a slightly messy dump of variables. This is very similar to the XML dump when we tried to understand what the root stored. There's basically an array of 4 elements. This is what this displays, and each of it is associated with a bunch of values. So you can essentially see that the information is stored here. That is all the point of the example is. So what does this do? Much like, so what does this line of code do? We've used this before. We used this last week for the MySQL transactions. What does this line of code do? It checks to see if... well, it's not checking for to see if it's comma separated. Here, right. So not really. We're not checking for the object type. We're just checking to see whether it exists, basically. We're just checking to see if this data, whatever we store in data, actually exists or not. So if we're at the end of the CSV file, this is going to return false, and we're not going to variable dump whatever the data stores. So here we say data equals fgetcsv handle. Let's open the fgetcsv. So the handle here we've seen is what we set up right here. So the format of this is the handle, the length, and the delimiter. This is a CSV file, so that it's delimited by commas. And we want to look for a maximum length of 1,000 characters, because I'm going to say arbitrarily, with some forethought, that my row is never going to be longer than 1,000 characters. And I'm going to say I want to comma separate this and store it in my data variable. Just like MySQL query fetch MySQL array, remove the first row after we read it. This will also keep moving on to the next part of the CSV file. And while this is not empty, I'm going to dump it. So we got a nice dump here. We'll do another example, and then I'll take questions. So this one, it displays student's name is it displays the tree student's name. How did I do this? I set up the same. The first part of the code is the same. So I'm opening the file again, and here I'm saying I'm storing the value of the first row in data. And while this is not equal to false, I'm saying echo student's name is data of 0. So what am I doing here? I have a file, let's say, of four columns, right? And each of these columns is delimited by a comma, right? So I'm going to say A, B, C, D. I'm saying data equals fgetcsv of this, given delimited by the comma. So I'm going to get data of 0. So data is going to be an array. Its 0th index is going to store A, and then B. The first one is B, the second one is C, and the third one's D. So fgetcsv returns an array that stores all the values of that row. We'll look at an example with the Yahoo with the Yahoo Finance, but this roughly translates to if you know what your rows map to, which you can look up online, you know which rows to pull out from here. For instance, here I knew that the first row stores the name. So I said data of 0 is going to be the name, and I'm just going to iterate through this, and it should not be a slash end there. It should be a break, because I'm not doing PHP, I'm doing HTML. But student's name is so-and-so, break. Questions? Yeah?
Now, in our case, we're not opening a file, a
CSV file. Right, so it... So if you go, the question is, we don't actually open a file, it's a web URL. Although it says handle, it can be a handle to anything. So when you go on the website, what it actually gives back to you is a CSV file. So I don't know if you...
It'll
still work the same way. The last example is based on that, but other questions? So this is a little more intricate, nothing special based on what we've done here. So I know A is name, I know B is age, C is school, and D is whatever. So I'm going to say display student named, the name of the student, right? Aged, the age, which is the first column, studies, whatever, and goes back to 2, which is C, which here is my school. Given any row of n array, n columns, when you store it in data using fgetcsv, it'll give you back a row of n elements. It'll give you back an array of n elements, which you can access using just by looking up the index. Questions? Great. So final example is what you will actually use. So here you will say, let's take a look at this. The URL is really long, but the URL is in the specs. If you've seen the specs. But it says fopen, right? And it has a URL. And this is the interesting part. So it says s equals goo. What kind of URL is this? What kind of request am I making here? A get request. How do I know that?
It's
because my parameters are stored in the URL. S presumably stands for stock name, and I'm going to give it a stock name, and it's going to give me back a CSV containing information of that stock. So if I wanted MSFD, which stands for Microsoft, what will my URL look like? It will be the Yahoo Finance, whatever, question mark, S equals MSFT, the rest of it is the same as in here. So given any arbitrary string S, so if you have a page quote.php that passes where there's a form, right? And you submit, the user submits what he wants, the name of the stock he wants. Let's say he submits MSFT, be it via post or get, doesn't matter. We have quote q.php. All you have to do is build this URL from that value, which is just concatenation and sprintf if you want to use it, and call an fgetCSV just as we've done here. And what does that give you? It gives you an array of 8 elements, apparently, that as of today, that is 26th, yep, that as of today's talks, the trading closed at 4 p.m., so the final value was $554.21. Questions? Great. So, this, yep.
Having looked at what got passed back, just in the string, mm-hmm. Does the fget CDS strip off like quotes? Because I noticed when I've done it using the other method that they use and just look at the whole mm-hmm. string. The symbols were in quotes.
So I don't think so. The question was, why are the symbols not in quotes? I don't think that's a function of fgetCSV, but the way I'm printing it. I'm using print r here instead of variable dump. So if I'd said variable dump, it's just how these different, so I use print r here because it like prints it neatly. If I actually used, I believe in the second one, for instance, in the first one, here for instance, the name, the strings are in quotes. That's simply because I dumped it using a variable dump.
So we have to actually get rid of the quotes.
So
the reason I'm asking is that if you're in the fget-s and you've got the symbol, you have quote, symbol, quote.
We don't. You don't have quote, symbol, quote. That's what I'm saying. So you're getting but given a string, if you print it with print variable dump, it's going to print it with quotes. If you print it with print r, it's not going to print it with quotes. So it's not a function of what you get. So what you get does not have any quotes. You don't have to worry about like parsing, removing the quotes from that string. But what you do, the quotes are here because of the way you're printing it. Makes sense?
I think I was just using the string echo that showed
quotes. Okay. Let's see. So stock lookup is pretty much just that. Let's go through the basic transactions now. So if I want to buy a stock, what do you want to do? What are the steps? Can I rub this out? Have people written this down if you want to?
What does it say on that top?
Oh, this was just this is an MSFT, which is like the stock ticker symbol, anything you want it to be. Can I raise this? Great. Okay, so let's do buy first. What are the steps that I want to do if I want to buy? There's a form where you submit. So this is a consistent structure, right? You have an HTML form, could be PHP if you want it to be, and it submits to either another. We'll keep it simple. We'll always post or get pass it via a GET request to another page. This page is your handler of sorts. It's a PHP page. You grab these values from the HTML form and you change things, you look up values, you query databases, whatever you want to do. So here you have some form which submits, and I say I want quantity 5 of MSFT. So what all do you have to do for this?
Get the price of MSFT.
Right, get the price. How will I do that? Just by looking it up the way we wrote it right now. So think when you're before you start writing code, think about this. You're going to be querying for your price so often. So what is perhaps the best way to do it would be to create a function that takes a value, that is the stock symbol, and then gives you back the price or a list, an array that gives you back all the information you might need about that. So you're going to get the price using either a separate file or a function preferably, and then? Right, so n times price should be less than balance. How will you look up the balance? You have your value here. You will query the user's table. Actually, you will query the user's table for that value to see how much balance I have. This has to be less than balance. If this is not true, you basically want to apologize. You want to say, "Oh, sorry, you can't buy it because you don't have enough money." Any error handling of any sort. Once that is done, the next step is going to be to, if I do have enough money to buy it, I want to add a row to the portfolio. Because you're always going to sell, when you're buying, you don't have to worry about whether it exists or not. You're always going to go add it to the portfolio. And then finally, you want to decrease the price in your balance. So does everybody kind of like, do you visualize how you can translate these into SQL commands? So this is going to be, of course, just fget CSV as we've seen it. There's going to be select balance from users where user ID equals user ID. Yep.
Yeah? To get the buy price, do we still use the last trade or should we use the or as?
Do you use the last trade or?
There's an option in Yahoo to get the bid or ask price.
The last price is what we use. So you just want to look up the first, yeah. So here I believe it is the fact. See, it's the first. It is the first index story.
Not different from the quote.
No, don't. It's not different from the quote thing. So it's the same thing. So that's why I said you can create a function that grabs the values and you can use it there as well as here. And then you want to say n times price select star and then this is an if statement to see if this is less than select star from star and then grab the value from your query result to see whether the balance is greater than this. If it is, add a row, which it'll be insert into table portfolio, set of values that you want to give it. And finally, update table users, set price to price minus whatever this price was. Makes sense? Any questions? Yeah?
What if you want to increase the number of shares owned already?
Right. So this. David went through the lecture today. He did an example where you can add it if it is a duplicate, or it will insert. So by adding a row, that's what I meant. So if it exists, you want to update it, or. But you don't actually. You don't. I don't. Yeah. I guess you do have to do it to make sure you don't duplicate results in your portfolio. So you just want to add this if it's you want to add a row if it's not there. If it is, you just want to update the price doc quantity. Other questions? Great. So let's do cells. Cells are a little more complicated. So first step, once again, I'm going to give you a stock ticker and I'm going to give you a stock symbol and I'm going to give you the quantity I want to sell. I guess here you don't need the quantity because we're either going to sell all your stocks or not at all. So all I'm going to give you is a stock symbol, which presumably you have from your portfolio link to some sell.php, which will sell.php. That can be either a get or a post request once again. So the get request is going to be s equals the name of your symbol, whatever it is. So if I have in my portfolio, let's say MSFT, I have three of these, and I have and this cost at that time $500, whatever. And I'm going to have a link which says sell. So when I click this link, it is going to be redirected to this. It's going to link to this page where I pass it the name I link to. So here in this case, it's MSFT. If I want to pass it via post or get, however you want to do it, I guess get is the easiest way because you're running through that row. Once you click here, you have the symbol. What do you want to do with this symbol? First thing is to check to make sure you have it. Even though you've gotten there by clicking, do keep in mind that I could always add, even though I don't have any Google shares, I could always make this GOG just to see what happens. So you want to check to make sure the person actually owns stocks of that symbol. So check to see check if owned, right? If owned, look up the price. And I have the price now. I know how many stocks. Look up how many are owned, right? So check to see, check if owned, how many. Check to see if I have like 5 or 10. And then I have the price. So now I want to, here, what do I do? What is my third step? I want to update that table by deleting a row, because we're just storing information, and just delete that row. Delete your portfolio, delete row from portfolio table. And then finally, just like last time, update the users table using a similar SQL query. Here you're going to say plus the amount instead of minus. Questions?
Let's say if you're selling GOG, and are you going to delete from the portfolio table?
Right. You basically want to say, you want to delete from the portfolio table. You want to say, delete star from portfolio, where user ID equals this user ID, because I don't want to delete the stocks of all the users who have Google stock, and stock symbol equals GOG, and then it will delete them. Right, it shows only the latest. Yeah. Yep.
If you don't currently have any shares of the stock in your portfolio and you try to sell it.
Right, so that is the first step here. Check to see if you actually own it.
But let's say you didn't check, what would happen? Because it wouldn't be able to count.
I think MySQL, like the MySQL function throws an error there. We're not going to have multiple instances of the, so that's what she brought up when somebody brought it up here. When you add a stock of the same symbol that you owned before, you want to update the quantity. You don't want to add a new row.
Right. Okay.
Right. Makes sense.
So even if it's at a different price.
Doesn't matter, because the price is going to be reflected in your balance, so it's not going to. Other questions. Great. So, let's see, let's go back to the specs for a second. So you want to validate, you want to be as rigorous with error checking as possible. That's one of the, I believe one of the, says, server-side error checking. So you want to make sure consistently that there is never a case where you're querying for something that does not exist, or you're trying to update a value, you're looking for values that does not exist. All of those checks have to be made before you commit a transaction. So in terms of design of your code, of your project, this project's most, you're going to be reusing a lot of code. For instance, every time you want to look at the price, you're going to call this function, presumably. You're going to do this set of operations where you're grabbing the CSV, you're looking at the price, grabbing the first value from the array, and saying this is the price. In terms of design of the code, the best way to go about it would be to create some functions.php and include it in your file every single time. So in every page, if I say require underscore once function.php, if I have a function which says get price, and it takes one argument, which is my stock symbol, which is all I need for a price, and create a separate function for do the transactions here. So do the operations here: grab the CSV, file get CSV, and then look up the price, and then return the price. And so on for error checking as well. So you can say check to see if given a stock symbol and a user ID, check to see if the person owns the stock. And once you break your code down into these modular functions, going back to your going in your actual page, it's going to be a bunch of function calls that checks for values and then updates them. This is probably the best, most, this is, like David was saying today, this is one of the biggest things about Project 2. And like in Project 1, where it was all one huge project that you wanted to work on, there's going to be separate parts. That the registration part, for instance, is just a set of values being inserted into a table. So it's all separate modular parts. then you link them together to have the fin- to get the final project. Are there any other questions at this point? So next week we'll take a look at validation. So that's going to be JavaScript. There's going to be a bit of JavaScript in next lecture, and then we'll follow it up with some validation. I had it on for tonight, but the examples are on this website, on the CS75 website. So if you want to take a look at those before lecture, that'd be great. It's basically a bunch of validation it's a bunch of code to validate different form inputs, like you want here. So when somebody registers, you don't want them to give you an empty field for the username. So a bunch of checks like those, all implemented. Looking forward to this week. Looking forward for the rest of the week. You should probably get started on designing the schema and building several parts of your code. So if you want to work with the users table, and create login in the registration facility, right? So if somebody logs in, you authorize them, so on. Next week, we will go through locks for SQL transactions because it's one of the requirements, and go over JavaScript. I will be around for any more questions. Do swing by if you have any.